Hey buddies, it is the Massive Report podcast brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton and available in a craft beverage retailer of any repute near you, and the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street, a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. It is episode 236 of this distinguished podcast. June 26th, we're recording on that Monday for your reference. Do a quick roll call. Hi, my name's Bart. Today, joining the panel, we've got Patrick Murphy. Smurf alert, what's up?
I'm doing splendid. It's summertime, and it couldn't be nicer out.
It is actually really wonderful out today. I kind of wish we were recording this podcast on a porch, perhaps like the dope porch at the Old North Arcade or Land Grant Brewing Company. We've also got Ralph Schudel with us. Ralph, how are you doing? How are you dealing with the heat, not just outside, but also on the Twitters?
You know, it's the takes are hot. The sun is hot, but I'm doing well. And anytime there are 8 goals scored within the confines of Moffray Stadium on a day, I'm a happy camper.
Is good to hear. I think we had a lot of happy campers at Moffray Stadium this past Saturday. Of course, rounding it out, we've got Alex Stanek. Alex, how are you, sir?
Not too bad, not too bad.
That's good to hear. Not too bad. I think we heard a lot of that over the weekend as Crew SC getting a big win, dare I say a statement win, over the Montreal Impact this past Saturday at Moffray Stadium, number 8 on the campaign as we are hitting the, actually just passed, I believe, the midway point of the season. So we'll ask that question, was this a statement match for Columbus or for Greg Berhalter, the head coach and sporting director? We had a resurgence from Ethan Finley, not goals, but looked a lot like the Ethan Finley of the 2014 or 2015 campaigns. And is this an indication of him turning a new corner and maybe Crew SC, the rest of the team along with them? We'll talk about the back line, which was really bend but don't break last Saturday against Montreal. Zach Steffen, of course, a huge game for him, some big-time saves, and an apple for good measures. We'll look at Adam John and Kakutamane, a couple impact subs for Columbus, something that we haven't seen much of this season, especially on Mane there. A big, big performance from him. And then we will preview Crew SC's upcoming game this weekend against Atlanta United, get our predictions as well. But first, Patrick Murphy, why don't you take us back to Saturday and get the recap of that big 4-1 win against Montreal?
Yeah, an interesting game, I think. And I think I say that most weeks because most of these games are interesting, but this one for a different reason. Obviously, Columbus came out, got the early goal, and then gave up a goal immediately afterwards. You mentioned Ethan Finley, and I think, especially in the first half, he was real effective attacking Fisher on the kind of left-hand side of Montreal's three center backs. Fisher committed a foul on Finley that led to the Federico Higuain free kick straight to the goal. And then Pipa kind of had a brain fart and turned the ball over in the defensive half. Jonathan Mensah falls on his backside, and Ignacio Piatti slips it to a teammate who tucks it home. So 1-1 at halftime. Not a ton of panic, but I think, you know, most fans were probably hoping for a little bit better performance in the first 45 minutes. Montreal seemed like the better team early in the first half, I think, but then Columbus started to gain possession. I think we were talking today at practice, there was a stretch right after the first 10 minutes of the second half where Columbus had like 91% of the possession or something, which is, you know, even for a 5-minute stretch is rather remarkable. But the big change that happened was bringing in Kakutamane for Justin Merrim. You know, like you said, Bart, we haven't seen a ton of impact subs this season, but he certainly was one in this game. A guy who had an injury scare this past week that he was dealing with, potential for him to miss the season on the initial diagnosis. Turns out that it was more of a foot sprain than anything. He was back in training late this week. Comes off the bench. First touch, he gives the ball away, but his second touch immediately following that, he puts the ball in the back of the net. to give the team the lead. Shortly after, he, you know, sends in a very nice ball for Ola Kamara, who finishes another volley goal, a fantastic goal. And then we close it off with another substitute, Adam John, who we've discussed a lot on this show for what he hasn't been able to do. But in this one, he comes in and quickly flicks the ball on to Higuain from a Zach Steffen goal kick. And Higuain puts in his second of the game. So, you know, not the best performance, I don't think. You know, I think the team has played better soccer this year. But, you know, they're able to convert these chances. We've talked about that a lot. Higuain was certainly on fire. You know, the sparks off the bench were good to see. So it's nice to see a team take advantage, especially playing a Montreal team who played in the midweek, was on some short rest, and you could see they started to get tired, and Carrasco took advantage.
Well, and you mentioned Pepe Higuain and a two-goal game for him. That brings it now up to 9 goals, 5 assists for Pepe on the campaign. He's just too short of matching his career high with at least his Columbus career high. I believe he put up 11 goal campaigns in, I believe, the 13 and 14 seasons. And, you know, we've talked about his resurgence throughout this year, really. But we're looking to be entering uncharted territory for Pepe in terms of his offensive productivity this season. I mean, last year he had, in 3 more games, he had 4 goals and 3 assists, already 9, and approaching, again, that 11-goal bar very early on this campaign.
He's been phenomenal this season. And I think he's one of the pieces that really make this team work when they work. And they don't always work, but when this team is kind of playing at its best, Federico Higuain is usually one of the main reasons for that. And not just his passing, but his offensive contributions, like you said. He's putting up a lot of goals. But when you talk about the goals, you also have to think about what he does other than that. And he's playing key passes. Last game, you know, against Montreal, he had 3 key passes, which was the most on the team. Nobody else on the team had more than one, actually. He's setting up other players. He's drawing defenders away from other players, creating space. And he's kind of just acting as this go-between for everybody else on the field. He seems like, every time I watch him play, he seems like he's always in the right spot to kind of connect to other players. And having a player with that kind of soccer mind is a huge benefit to our club. I'm also really impressed with the way he's kind of maintained his composure throughout this kind of bad stretch that we have had. I think a lot of other players, you see their heads drop from time to time. Pepe's always angry. Pepe's always fighting. He's never giving less than 100%. And you want players like that on a team. I know we've recently had a captain's change, and I think I was pretty clear in the preseason that I really wanted the captain's armband to go to Federico Higuain. And it's for a lot of those reasons that I wanted that. But even though he's not the captain, in fact, I think he acts as a captain on the field in a lot of ways. And he's somebody that a lot of our young players can really look up to. And I'm so happy we have him. I hope he retires in Columbus, to be totally honest with you. But when you look at what he's contributed over the years and what he's still contributing now, I think you have to rank him among the very great crew players in our club's history.
And I agree with that 100%, Alex. And, you know, it's great to see him come back and have a season like this after a lot of people, including myself, were getting quite ready to write him off because he looked very dull in form. He had a very injury-plagued 2016 season. But, you know, Higuain, you know, took a second to get going in the preseason, but really seems to be getting back into full stride. And, fellas, a stat I just pulled up using the Google machine is that he is now just 4 assists shy of tying his career high that he set in 2013 and in the MLS Cup year of 2015.
Yeah, to go along with that, Bart, I think that one of the big things that he's done this year, and not that he necessarily wasn't before, but I think he's really gelled with his teammates. Those other attacking three around him, you know, he missed time the year before, so he didn't get as much chemistry with Ola. Obviously, he's played with Ethan and Justin quite a bit, but, you know, Kai claimed that he was never, you know, a big recipient of Higuain's passes and things like that. And, you know, whether or not that's true is another debate. But you can see that this front four really plays well together. And you know, even when a guy like Kakuta Mane comes in, they've developed some chemistry. You know, if you go back and watch Mane's goal, Pepe receives the ball near midfield, juggles it over a defender, and while he's juggling it over the defender, sees Mane begin the run, and with his back to Mane, you know, hits this half volley over his shoulder that it's right in stride to Mane. He knows exactly where Mane's going. You know, so you know, you don't see those passes very often from guys in this league. And the guys that you do are really the best. And even the play where he gives the ball up that leads to the goal, he immediately is hustling back. You know, he's trying to close down Piatti before Piatti lays the ball off. A lot of times from an attacking designated player, you're not going to see that kind of defensive effort. When he gives the ball over, he's going to, you know, expect someone else to kind of pick up for him. And, you know, despite the fact that Montreal ends up scoring the goal there, it was quite the effort from Higuain. So, you know, I really think that they're very fortunate to have a guy who cares enough about this team to put in the time and get to know his teammates and things like that. And, you know, as Alex said, he's one of the best to put on the black and gold uniform.
Well, and one quick thing about that pass, the pass to Mane, where he kind of juggled the ball a little bit and then hits it forward. A lot of times crew players, when they complain about the team, they say, oh, Columbus has never been one of these clubs that signs these big name players, these really talented, older star players. And it's true that Columbus has not traditionally been a club that goes out and spends $10 million on some celebrity European soccer player. But we have a player in Federico Higuain who is among the very elite midfielders in this league and in this league's history, I think. There are only a handful of players in this league who can play a pass like that, and they're all DPs for the most part. And there are a lot of DP midfielders in this league that can't play a pass like that. So I think we're very fortunate to have a guy like Federico Higuain, and I think we should, you know, keep in mind that we have a player like this and we should be thankful for him, because I think he's taken for granted sometimes because he's been around a while and he's kind of old news to a lot of crew fans. But we are very, very lucky to have a player who is that talented, who can play the beautiful game as beautifully as he does.
And I agree with that. You know, you fellas have been talking about his passing ability moving up the field. The one thing I've noticed about Higuain's game this year is that he's perfectly content to make the pass backwards to make the pass forward. So it's, you know, he gets in a tough situation, he'll knock it back to Artur or Trapp so that Trapp and Artur can reset and either try to find him or try to get to Miram or Finley on the wings. And that's something about his game that I've noticed this year that's evolved, is he's not really trying to force the ball into attacking situations, but he's much more content with resetting by passing it backwards to getting it forward.
Certainly that, but also the set pieces, which, you know, Pepe, notably when he's on the field, he's taken all of them, whether it's corners or free kicks. But what we saw a little bit of on Saturday, some, you know, misdirection from Greg Berhalter, and we've been seeing it more and more, these, you know, the setting up a left-footed player out there along with Pepe. In the case Saturday, it was Juka Raitala, but you've seen Waylon Francis there hovering over the balls as well for the set piece. But to see Pepe put one in, and just to see this team capitalize on a set piece, I think was really big and might have lifted a little bit of a collective weight off the shoulders, because especially in the corner department, but also in the free kick, they haven't come up with too much on those. Do you think that might open the floodgates a little? Obviously, you're not going to score on every free kick or score on every corner, but the law of averages has to say that Crew SC have a handful of these coming in for how inadequate they have been early on this season.
Yeah, it's interesting with set pieces, because obviously they have guys who can hit them, you know, Higuain being chief among them, whether it's corner kicks, free kicks, you know, direct or indirect. I think that you've seen at times in Higuain's career, and I know that New England is a place that he's scored a couple free kick goals, he certainly has that capability. And, you know, the fact that they don't score on many of them, you know, some of it may have to do with where fouls are committed, you know, the players that they put in the box, things like that. I mean, we have seen two goals this season come indirectly off corners with the, you know, I think it was both times Crenali heading it down and Justin Merrim getting on the end of it. But you're right, we haven't seen a kind of a dominant set piece team since really Chad Marshall left is the last time I really remember this team being good at it. And it is interesting, and I wonder if something like that can help spark a little bit, you know, of that part of the game that's kind of been missing the last few years.
It was certainly encouraging, a vintage performance for Pipa Higuain. And, you know, I think we touched on a little bit, too, a vintage performance, albeit without the goals for Ethan Finley, especially in that first half. And a little bit surprised, I think, you know, some of us were to see him finish off the game, go all 90 minutes. But, you know, it wasn't like we've seen in some games earlier this season where when the ball went over to Finley on the right side, it was almost on an island. His touches were a lot softer. He was beating Kyle Fisher on a number of opportunities, exploiting that matchup, but also finding his teammates. And that's got to be a very encouraging sign for this team. And you just imagine if you can get a goal, what a game with that does for his confidence. And then if you can add a goal in these games coming up, you could get a very different, a very positive turn of play for Ethan Finley, and that would bode well for the team as a whole.
I think Ethan Finley's very close to turning a corner. And what I saw, albeit it was against, you know, the 10th place team in the East right now, but, you know, going up against Kyle Fisher, he was absolutely terrorizing the poor guy and actually got him a yellow card. I believe it was in the first quarter of an hour. But, you know, Finley looked good. His runs were made with purpose. He was moving much more fluid, I think, than I've seen him in previous matches here in the 2017 season. And again, I don't know if that goes back to Pipa and how well Pipa was playing with the, you know, synchronization between those two. But I mean, Finley looked good, and I think he's very close to breaking through. And like you said, Bart, I think all he needs is a goal to start getting, you know, the ball rolling.
It's interesting with Ethan because it's been clear these last couple games that they're trying to get him going. Whether it's matchups that they've exploited or tried to exploit, or just because they know what a danger he can be. You know, I mean, this is a guy that even last year with what we consider a pretty down year after two really good years, still scored 6 goals. And I think without looking at the numbers, I think he had 9 assists, which for a winger in MLS is pretty solid. You know, I know that Greg talked to the offensive guys before the Atlanta game and said, this is, you know, we need to get Ethan involved. And you saw that in that Justin's setting him up, I believe on both of those attempts. You know, and as Ralph said, I think, you know, for a guy who, you know, has proven in the past what a dangerous goal scorer he can be, getting himself in some good positions like he did against Atlanta. And then even in the, this past game, you know, although he didn't register shots like he did against Atlanta, he was getting in good positions, was fouled, like I mentioned, for the goal. You know, you're starting to see him be used a little bit more to get in behind and try and create things. I think you could argue a little bit that he might be pressing, you know, the shot, at least one of the shots against Atlanta, he probably could have laid off a cross for Ola Kamara. But, you know, I do think it's important to get him scoring goals because, as they mentioned on the broadcast, going into this game, they only have 5 goal scorers and now 6 with Mane. But the vast majority of those have come from 3 guys in Kamara, Higuain, and Justin Merrim. So if you could get Finley even adding in, you know, 6 goals like he did a year ago, that would be a kind of a boost to this attack and take some pressure off those other 3.
I'm cautiously optimistic about the whole thing. I think.
Do tell.
I'm not sure. I want to see more from Finley than what I saw, and I want to see the team play somebody who's not a bottom of the barrel club. I mean, I want to see somebody other than Montreal Impact come here and have Finley put in a performance like that. I think it's encouraging that he's doing that, but I still need to see more than what I've seen from him so far. I think that there's still a player there, but he has to find that form. And although last game was encouraging, we've had a series of games before that where it was still kind of the same old out of form Finley. So if he can turn the corner, I'd be happy to see that happen. But he's got to put two or three games like this together for me to kind of regain a little bit of confidence in him as the player that he was 2 years ago. I think he can do it. I just want to see that happen. And I want to see him put in a game like that against somebody else.
Well, Alex, with the way that Justin's kind of evolved and the goal scoring of Will Kamara, does he need to be the player he was 2 years ago? Or can you get a, you know, 7-goal, 5-assist season from him and that be enough, do you think?
I mean, I think whatever we can get from him is what we're going to get. And the more we can get from him, the better. But I don't feel comfortable complimenting him just on the basis of this one game because it is Montreal.
Sure.
I think that's kind of where I am with Mane from this game as well. I thought Mane was phenomenal when he came on. But I want to see Mane be phenomenal against a team that is going to, you know, that we might face in the playoffs, for example. I'm kind of on the fence about all this still. And I know that that's weird because I'm Mr. Sunshine Brigade or whatever. But I do think Montreal can be a very weak team, and I thought that they did not play a good game at all in Columbus this weekend. So if we can replicate these performances against Atlanta, then that's something that I'm going to get really excited about, because then I feel like not only have these players turned the corner, but maybe we've turned the corner as a group. But yeah, I'm not willing to read too much into this Montreal game, just like I wasn't willing to read into the losses earlier this season. I want to see how this home stretch plays out and judge it more completely afterward.
Real quick, guys, because you got me thinking when you were talking. You know, we're seeing more of his Ethan Finley's role that is evolving. Do you guys think for the possession brand of soccer the Crew SC play is do you think getting those fouls in those dangerous areas and kind of inching the ball up the field, so to speak, and trying to get those restarts on set pieces is going to be something now that we're going to see included in the Crew SC game plan? Or do you prefer more of a free-running Ethan Finley?
I think what Alex said about you kind of take what you get from him can apply to that as well. Like, you know, if he can get in and cause issues on his own, you know, scoring, assisting, that type of thing, great. If he's creating set-piece opportunities that then the team can take advantage of, you know, I think that's equally as impactful. Obviously, if, you know, he gets in behind Fisher on the play early in the game and scores a goal, you know, it really is the same as Federico putting it in off the free kick. Maybe if he scores, it boosts his confidence a little bit more, but I do think, you know, him being involved in that play is a big part of, you know, building that confidence as well. So I think you take what you can get, especially, you know, that this is going on a year and a half now of us talking about trying to get Ethan Finley going. Whatever can come from it, I think is a positive.
On the other hand, you've got a player in Kakuta Mane, and you kind of touched on it, Murph, and I didn't realize the extent of the injury scare, because we've all been asking, you know, again, here's when are we going to see the Kakuta Mane that we thought that Crew SC had acquired, you know, the 22 goal scorer at 22 years of age. He was somewhat unimpressive in his first several appearances. Of course, there was a lot made about the fact that he wasn't fit per Greg Berhalter. And he comes in and makes that immediate impact in against Montreal. And of course, you saw when he scored that goal, he collapsed. And again, you know, at the risk of sounding cliche, again, it looked like it was a huge weight off of his shoulders, quite literally. And do you think that he might be a player? You know, finally, do we have a case where you've got both Ethan Finley and Kakuta Mane that are playing at the level that they're capable of, and they can really push each other? And if you're Greg Berhalter, you can go with a hot foot.
Well, there's a couple things I think with Kakuta. The first one is I think it was big that he got to play on the left. Greg has said a handful of times, including today, he thinks Kakuta is equally as comfortable in any of the attacking positions. But I don't see it that way. You know, he played on the left a lot in Vancouver. We know the success he had in Vancouver. You know, this is one of the first few times we've got to see him there. And I'm not saying that that is a direct correlation for him getting the goal and an assist, especially the goal, because I don't think that matters where he's coming from. But you look at the assist that he had, you know, taking a guy on, he kind of tries to touch the ball by him. It gets deflected off the guy's leg. But he just looked more confident chasing that ball down, you know, even off of his weaker left foot, puts in a ball in a really dangerous area. I mean, even if Ola's not, you know, right there and doesn't hit such a nice volley, I think that, you know, it's causing that defense trouble because they're, you know, backs to goal type of thing, trying to come out on it. So I think that has to do with it. I think that you're going to have issues with that because obviously Justin Marin plays on the left for this team and he's not going to lose his spot anytime soon. But, you know, I think as a substitute role in times like that, that could be big. Another thing, you mentioned his celebration, kind of the weight off his shoulders. Somebody looked it up in the press box, and it had been 364 days since Kakuta had last scored an MLS goal. Now, he was hurt for the end of last season, almost the full second half, so some of that time he wasn't playing, but, you know, just kind of a weird statistic there that it's been that long since he found the back of the net. And he also mentioned, and not to get religious, but it was the end of Ramadan, he's Muslim. You know, so that celebration was kind of him going down and praying and kind of thanking, you know, his God for not being as hurt as they thought he was and whatnot. So, you know, it was definitely a moving moment for him. And I think he was, you know, you could see post game that he was pretty excited about it still, you know, 15, 20 minutes later.
Absolutely, and you know, if Crew SC can get both of those players contributing, that'll be huge. And we got a contribution from Adam John, a nice that little flick on the goal kick from Zach Steffen to help set up Pipa Higuain on that fourth goal. Obviously, I think that was, among other things, it was probably fortunate and helpful for Adam Jean to be able to contribute in a meaningful way. But also, I want to take a look back to the fact that we saw this team concede, you know, they conceded that goal immediately. The old soccer cliche, I think in any sports, you know, in hockey, it's the shift right after you score a goal is the most important. Soccer, again, you know, the next few minutes right after you score a goal. That was a big red flag for Columbus. They immediately give up that goal, all the wind out of the sails in the Nordeck. And we see this team find a way in the second half to come back and not just, you know, get that goal to go ahead, but with Adam John coming onto the field, it wasn't about slowing play down and holding it up and closing them out. They continued to attack throughout that second half. And I think, yes, of course, you've got a tired opponent, an opponent that isn't as skilled, but I was encouraged to see the team go about that, not try to get away from the style of play and tempo that had brought them success, just to try to hold on to a win.
And that's great points, Bart. I mean, that is stellar. And this is something that Murph and I talked about on the post-game show on Facebook was, you know, Greg Berhalter's been criticized for his substitutions numerous times, including on this podcast at times, by me as well. But I think he hit the nail right on the head. And it's, you know, the one thing that we know, guys, about being around this game for as long as we have is that soccer is a game about chances. And it's, you know, you get the right bounces and you get everything happening for the right reasons. It's unexplained, but it happens. You know, and with Mane stepping onto the pitch at the time that he did to make the impact and, you know, just do what he did. And then, you know, you think about Adam John, you know, our colleague Chris Landis likes to you know, talk to him about as Mr. Excitement. He's somebody that you bring in to shut up shop. And I agree, you know, but the thing that he did that was uncharacteristically not Adam John was, you know, to get that flick going and get it right to Pepe Higuain. And, you know, for a guy that's a secondary striker on this team who's been numerously talked about to be replaced by somebody maybe in the transfer window, it was kind of impressive and a little bit refreshing to see him. You know, talking to him after the game, he was a little bit flabbergasted that he got as quick of a look as he did coming onto the pitch. And, you know, he was really pleased that he was able to contribute to the team in an effective manner. I think something that's kind of lingered with him is, you know, the couple tap-ins he could have had in Cincinnati that could have changed the game for Crew SC. But I think he had a little bit of a weight lifted off his back in this one.
And I think, you know, I wrote today about the subs, and I do think Greg deserves credit for making these subs just as much as he deserves criticism for some of his other changes this year. But I do think we should, you know, make it clear that while he, you know, his subs did come in and make an impact, they weren't much different than what we've seen throughout the season. You know, usually one of the midfielders, the outside midfielders, comes out around the 60th minute. If they have a lead, they like to bring Adam in. If they don't have a lead, they have to bring Adam in because they don't have anyone else. Now, I do think tactically it made sense to take out Justin. He wasn't having a good game. You know, I assumed it would be Ethan coming out, but take out Justin and, you know, try and isolate Camara 1v1 with a speedy player, and that's obviously what worked on the goal. So, you know, tactically I think it worked, but I also think these are the you know, similar subs to what we've seen before. One thing I do think I wanted to point out was, if you look at these goals, at least the three in the second half all came from fairly direct play, which is something we don't associate with this team very much. You know, obviously Higuain's touch, you know, downfield to Mane. You know, the ball out wide even was like route one stuff down the left wing on the assist. And then the long ball from Zach Steffen that led to Higuain's goal. You know, so some interesting, you know, little tweaks. And I think that's just, you know, I don't think that's a shift in the style of play as much as it is the players kind of, you know, taking it upon themselves to go at a tired defense. But, you know, just interesting to see these goals come in a little bit different way than maybe we've been used to.
And encouraging to see the goals coming at one end, but at the other end, still concerns. Zach Steffen, of course, had to make some big saves throughout the game to keep the team in, especially when it was a 1-1 game, but even late. And one of the big concerns, remains a big concern, is Jonathan Mensah, the designated player center back, who, you know, we're now past the halfway point of the season. I believe he's got, you know, at least 10 starts or so, and he's still making, I mean, there are the mental errors, there are the physical errors, in this case, you know, falling. There have been a couple of times where he's fallen, or you know, just kind of made a bonehead physical error. And I'm just wondering, you know, at what point, I myself am concerned already, at what point should Crew SC fans remain concerned? Is this an issue for the team? Because you can't have that much money tied up, especially a budget team that we talk about Columbus being, in a player who you can't count on to be an impact starter.
And I agree with you, and I think, you know, I think Crew SC fans' fear in Jonathan Mensah is justified. There were a couple plays that he made last night, Saturday night, and then in addition to, you know, things that he's done throughout the season where he's just not reading the game well. You know, the big thing that sticks to me, and I think forever is etched in my mind, is on the counterattack when Connor Maloney was left on an island against Cubo Torres in Houston. You know, Jonathan Mensah's at midfield trying to break the play up because he was coming back on a counterattack and he wasn't in the proper position. You know, and you go back to Montreal again on Saturday night, he makes a crazy pass that I can't even rationally explain why he did it, across the goal mouth that almost gets picked off and then almost tapped in for an easy goal. You know, he makes some really weird physical decisions. And the thing is with this guy is, you know, it's nothing against him. And I keep saying, yeah, he's going to turn a corner. He's going to turn a corner. He hasn't turned that corner yet. And I know folks are out there screaming, you know, stick Crenali in there, stick Josh Williams in there. And you're seeing more Josh Williams. But benching Jonathan Mensah is a very tough sell because it's an $800,000 contract that you have basically for a glorified bench warmer. The next course of action that I think he should take, or Greg for that matter should take, is start a few games on the bench. Have him watch other center backs do it. You know, if he is the professional that he says that he is, that should really kind of light a fire underneath him, because if he's getting beat out by Nico Ness, Josh Williams, hell, Lawless Abubakar, you know, get, you know, light that fire under him. Let him see what it's like to sit on the bench for a while, and don't let him think he's invincible because of his paycheck. Hello, Alex? Anybody?
Well, I don't know where Alex went, but I think you touched on one really big thing there, Ralph, is that, you know, the money that he is making does make it hard to bench him. You know, he's a designated player. They brought him in for a reason. You know, obviously they want to give him the opportunity to, you know, settle in and stuff. And he's certainly had that chance now. You know, he's played in 13 games, 12 starts, you know, and I think watching him play, there are some things that he does well. He's good in the air defensively, not so much offensively. His positioning is not bad. I think the system has made him kind of alter that, but I think with his feet is where you see the problems. And Ralph, you mentioned the pass that he went for a clearance. I went back and watched it today. Looks like he's just trying to hit it long down the middle and he just whiffs at it. And it goes, you know, thank God for Zach Steffen for Crew fans, because otherwise that's a sitter. And even on the goal, you know, he steps over and slips and falls, and Piatti has an easy pass at that point. You know, I think you can also blame Josh Williams a little bit for not stepping over. But yeah, I think, you know, a guy that you're paying this much, you expect a lot more out of. And, you know, sitting that much money on the bench, as Bart mentioned, on a team that's kind of on a budget is tough. You know, I think Greg Berhalter, you know, he's seeing these things. Let's be honest, it would be hard not to. But, you know, he also realizes that this guy does have talent and he wants to see it. You know, at some point, though, you're just going to have to bite the bullet. But, you know, if you do you go back to Alex Crenali, who, you know, the last few starts he made, I know it's been a while now, but he wasn't, you know, the same Alex Crenali that started the season against DC and some of those early games. You know, he struggled and showed some rookie mistakes, too. And I don't think that they're going to play Josh Williams and Nico Ness together, because I think they see them as kind of the same type of player. So, you know, if you turn to Alex, you have to be willing to accept some rookie mistakes, which may look similar to what Jonathan's doing, but, you know, I guess the argument there is you kind of grow with him and deal with those rookie mistakes instead of dealing with a guy who's expected not to make those.
Do we have Alex?
Hello, Alex? Alex?
It appears we do not have Alex. Go on, Ralph.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with you on that, Murph, and that's something I didn't contemplate was, you know, you think about, you know, Crenali making the very, very much the same mistakes that Jonathan would make, and it is very much just growing with him. And, you know, I would like to see it stick out with Jonathan, because frankly, you know, talking to him, I mean, he's a hell of a great guy. He's, you know, fantastic. And I really want it to work for him. But, you know, he's just, you know, it's just not working right now. It's not clicking.
Speaking of not working and clicking, Alex Stanek right now, we'll try to be getting him back on. Alex, can you hear us?
I don't know. Can you guys hear me?
He's joined.
Yeah, he's alive.
We got him.
Okay, I can talk again. Great. I don't know what happened there, but I'm back. Okay. So I think Mensah is not as good as he should be for the amount of money that we pay him. But I still think I prefer him over the other options. To me, Josh Williams is not a starting caliber center back for a Berhalter system. I think that center backs in a Berhalter system just need to be better than other center backs because of the amount of pressure that they're put under. And I don't think Alex Crenali is ready yet for a Berhalter system. I think if he was playing in a more conservative system defensively, I think he'd be fine. But I still think he needs more time. So the lineup I still want to see is Mensah with Ness. I think Nico Ness, when he played next to Jonathan Mensah, was a pretty decent combination. We conceded goals, but I never really felt like, oh, that was 100% on the center backs, at least not to the degree I felt last year. I think we had a lot of kind of issues still when we had that pairing, but that's kind of the pairing I prefer. Now, long term, is Mensah the DP center back that's going to carry this club into the future? Not from what I've seen so far. He is not up to the level that we need him to be given the amount of money that we're paying him. But we're also going to run into the problem of what do you do with a player like this who's on this big contract, and I'm assuming it's a multi-year deal. I'm not sure what the terms are specifically. I'm assuming it's at least a two-year deal. So if we can move him on in the offseason, maybe that's something we look at if it doesn't improve. But we may be stuck with this guy for a while, so hopefully he can adjust as the season goes on. It's not unusual for center backs to take a full season to kind of adjust to Major League Soccer, but hopefully he adjusts sooner rather than later, because I really don't think there's a better option out there right now for Crew SC.
Well, and here's something I think to think about, and you know, Ralph mentioned it in our chat here, but you know, Gaston Saro is technically still on this roster, and you know, he's been around the team some. He's been at some games. He's been at practice. I think he's been back and forth between here and Argentina in terms of where he's living. But you know, he's a guy that obviously played well when healthy. You know, has had two pretty major knee surgeries. Had an infection recently in that stemmed from the operation, and apparently it was fairly minor, but required him to go back to the hospital and under the knife. So, you know, that's a guy that I don't know how optimistic they are that they get him back, but right now they're getting salary cap relief because he's out with this injury. So if he is able to come back and, you know, they feel confident that he's able to play and those knees are going to hold up after the transplant, I think that it'll be interesting to see what they do, because I'm not sure that they, you know, can afford to have both of these guys on the roster. And if you go through a season with Jonathan where, you know, even if he does get better but not great, you know, what do you do with him with a non-DP guy like Saro coming back? So, you know, if he is able to come back, I think it presents some questions down the road. And we don't really need to go into it, but I just wanted to kind of, you know, put that out there and make sure people remember that this guy is still, you know, around the team, even if he's not able to play this season.
And that is, you know, an interesting point. But moving on, looking at it, so, you know, with that win, Crew SC actually vaulting past Atlanta, who they'll play this weekend, to fifth in the Eastern Conference standings. Again, and you, with an 8-9-1 record, you look at some of those games that it'd be nice to have some of those losses that should have been draws as draws. Because I think that would allay a lot of the fans, the fan base's concerns, and put Crew SC in a much more comfortable position. But you know, here we are with you know, the amount of games that they've gotten, no 17 or 18 games now under the belt, and just a single draw. But looking at this Atlanta team, you get a chance to see them again after that pretty disappointing loss in Atlanta. What do you expect to see in this Atlanta? They're coming off of, granted, we'll have a week's rest, but they're coming off of a 3 games and 8 game span. two teams, again, that have seen each other very different, very recently. What do you think Crew SC, the 11 that Crew SC puts out there, do you think you see the same group that we've seen these past two games? Do you think that, what did Crew SC have in store for Atlanta United, the expansion team?
I honestly think it's going to be the exact same starting 11 that we saw this coming, or last weekend, with the possible exception of the players who are going on international duty with Ghana. Greg has said that some of those players might not be back in time, that we might get some of them back. But you also have to keep in mind that if they're going on international duty, they're training, they're picking up minutes with another team. He might rest them once they're back just to kind of get them fully back into the Crew SC rotation of things. So they're not playing two games on a short rest. So I'm not really sure how that affects things. I hope that we see Nico Ness back instead of Mensah if Mensah's not going to play. I don't know why he has suddenly dropped off the radar of everything. He played the first half against Cincinnati, I believe, and then came off and then hasn't been seen since. And if anybody has seen Nico Ness around Columbus, please let me know. I'm worried about the guy.
I saw him today.
You did? Is he doing well?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was on the bench against Atlanta in Atlanta. He just didn't play.
I want him back. I don't know. I really like him. Maybe I rate him a lot higher than other people, but I think he might be the best center back on this team.
No, and I agree with you on that, Alex. I think he's probably been, you know, for the length of the season, the most consistent performer, certainly on the back end, you know, not counting Zach Steffen for Columbus. And if there's anybody that's built up enough, you know, capital and goodwill to weather a couple bad performances, you'd think it'd be Nico Ness. But, you know, we're seeing a short leash with Greg Berhalter, it seems, although, you know, there could be some injury flare-ups that, you know, might not have been publicized as much during this past span.
Yeah, I mean, with Nico, I think, you know, in the Cincinnati game, he banged heads shortly before halftime. They took him out at halftime, brought in Josh Williams. They monitored him going into that game was Wednesday, so Thursday, and, you know, decided there was no concussion issue, but he was handling some like neck soreness, I think is what was on the injury report. But he was on the bench against Atlanta this past week. He was not, which Greg said was more tactical than anything. I think that they expected a little bit different lineup than what they saw against Montreal, and expected maybe some bigger guys up top, and that's probably why you saw Crenali on the bench, if, you know, we take Greg at his word that it was tactical. But, you know, he was out there today. Most of the starters for the portion of practice that we were watching weren't there, so it was the guys who didn't play on Saturday. And he was doing a lot of individual work with Josh Williams and one of the other assistants, specifically on heading and things like that. So seems to be fully healthy. It wouldn't surprise me, Alex, as you mentioned, some of these Ghanaians, they have a game against, I believe, Mexico, or maybe not Mexico, they're in the Confederate. They have a game Wednesday, and then they play the U.S. Saturday. And from what Greg said today, it sounds like he expects some of them back. It wouldn't surprise me if maybe he brings back Harrison Offal and Jonathan Mensah and lets Mohamed Abu, you know, be available for selection against the U.S. Mohamed's obviously a guy who's kind of on the fringes of things when it comes to the national team, whereas Harrison seems to be a regular starter and Jonathan at least a guy who makes the 18. So I would, you know, imagine he would let Abu, you know, get his shot there and maybe bring the other two back, or maybe just Harrison if, you know, they're going to do something different along the back line this week. But other than that, yeah, I think the Atlanta lineup will look similar to what we saw last week and the week before. You know, I think that they, despite the 3-1 result, I think that they were happy with the performance of those guys leading up to right before the first goal, or the second goal that Atlanta scored, I'm sorry. They were kind of tiring Atlanta out a little bit, and then all of a sudden they get hit on the counter and Atlanta gets a little bit of life back and gets the momentum. But, you know, I think you saw some positives in both games, especially this past one from that lineup and maybe what it can do. And now you know kind of what you've got coming off the bench with a confident Kakuta Mane. So I wouldn't expect too many changes, maybe a couple if the Ghanaian guys are gone. But I think they like what they've got with this lineup right now.
So do you see any other, though, tactical changes? Because, again, we saw a Columbus team that was susceptible to the counterattack. You know, aside from you've got the Josh Williams pass out the back that was a pretty big nightmare. And, you know, but that is a bit indicative of the system, albeit not executing. Do you see any other tactical changes from Greg Berhalter? Or at least maybe that's something more that we will see on Saturday when you see the starting 11, when you see them out there. Do you think he needs to make any, I should say, is the question.
Yeah, I think the big thing against Atlanta that you have to worry about, and this was something we talked about going into the last game, is getting hit on the counter. You know, maybe that is a reason to bring in Nico Ness, because he's a little bit better on the ball, doesn't give it away as frequently as maybe some of the other guys. You know, I mean, the big thing I think is just being aware. You know, that Almiron chance is one, you know, not many guys can dribble it at the speed that he does and make that shot. Let's be honest, that was a hell of a shot from a really talented player. So, you know, they've obviously watched the film on it, so I am certain there will be tactical adjustments. You know, I don't imagine it's going to be anything drastic, but you know, I think they will certainly kind of tweak things to kind of help stem that counterattack, because, you know, Atlanta hasn't been great on the road. You know, they've been able to feed off that home crowd. So, you know, that in and of itself is an adjustment, but, you know, being wary of that counterattack will be big on Saturday.
So, you know, not only that, but let's look at this, you know, within the greater picture. And we talked about these, you know, these two home games, Montreal and Atlanta, but then also that road game on the 4th of July against Minnesota. First of all, we're looking at, you know, a lot of games over a short period heading into the Gold Cup break. And the importance of getting wins, or at least positive results, getting points in these games. And again, do you, you know, after a win against Montreal, do you feel a little bit more comfortable with a loss or that sort of result against Atlanta? Or is there still that pressing need to be getting wins heading into this Gold Cup break?
I mean, obviously we want to get as many points as possible. But I do think that breaking up the run of bad results that we've had counts for something. I think if we were to lose to Atlanta again, people could write it off as, okay, Atlanta's got our number this year. Hopefully we don't get them in the playoffs. But I don't know. I think people are going to freak out if we lose. I don't think they should, but I do think that you're going to see people go back to thinking the sky is falling if we lose a game.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you guys wholeheartedly, 100%. I was taking the rare Sunshine Brigade look the last Atlanta game where, you know, realistically, I think three or four chances and we were still in that game if we hit three or four of them away. You know, the Montreal game showed me a lot of resiliency. I think this squad, you know, has it within them, and I think they have the character on the team that they can come back if they face a deficit. You know, if you get a good crowd back at home, and you get, you know, the stands rocking on Saturday night. I've always remembered these fireworks games, you know, the games before the 4th of July, to have crazy good attendance. And, you know, the crowd always rocking and everything. You know, if you get a great atmosphere going, then, you know, things are going to be, things are going to be.
You know, so.
I said before you know, little stretch before the Gold Cup that I thought the team needed to come out of this with 7 points. They got the 3 points, you know, in the Montreal game. You know, I think Atlanta will be a more difficult task for sure. But as I mentioned before, they haven't been great on the road. 2 wins, which is the same as Columbus. They've gotten a few more draws, obviously. But I think, you know, this is an important game. You know, you want to kind of bounce back from that game 2 weeks ago and show that, you know, that you weren't 3-1 bad to Atlanta. You know, try and kind of mend some fans' thoughts on that game and get a win. You know, this is a team that has built up a lot of hype, but hasn't been as good as I think the casual fan thinks they are. So, you know, if you can get a win, especially like Ralph mentioned, in front of a big crowd, you know, they had a pretty solid crowd this past week, get another win to, at home again, which is where they've been really good, and then hopefully go to Minnesota with a short turnaround and get a result. I think you go in the Gold Cup game having built up a lot of good feelings, even though there was that pretty poor stretch.
I think the Minnesota game is going to be a lot more decisive as to how people feel going into this break. Minnesota is not a great team. If we come out of these three games with
they have been better though.
Recently. They have been better, but I still think they're a beatable team. Sure. And so if you get the win in Columbus last weekend, which we did, and then you drop another game to Atlanta, or you get a draw, and then you get a win in Minnesota, I think you go out of that feeling pretty good about things. So I think the Minnesota game, no matter how it goes, I think fans can be okay with things depending on whether or not we win in Minnesota. So that's the real game that I think everybody should be keeping an eye on.
And I agree with you to that extent, especially because Crew have been so unable to capitalize or really do much on the road, have much road success. So certainly that Minnesota game would be big. But I think if we're going to, you know, if we're going to look at that Montreal game and say that that's a, you know, a positive performance, again, we looked at that caveat and we've touched off on that this is a Montreal game coming off of, you know, just 3 days rest, and it's a team that has struggled throughout the year. But if you're fancy this Crew SC team, a playoff team, Atlanta's realistically a team that, you know, at some point you're going to have to go through. And this is a team, again, now you've taken them away from their home venue where they've been so successful, or much more successful. So you're at home where you've had, you know, virtually all of your success this week, this season. And you're the big team that, again, we've talked about how this is supposed to be one of the deepest teams that Greg Berhalter's had. And I do think, I don't want to, you know, go as far as to say it's a must win for Crew SC, but it's certainly a game that I'm not, you know, necessarily willing to just write off if it's a loss or it's a draw. I think it's a game that they have to put in a good performance with if you really want to have a good feeling about this team and their prospects for the season. Yes, there's still going to be a lot of time to go, but guess what? There are fewer games left in the season than have been played. You know, we're past that halfway point, and at some point, you know, you've got to start putting together the results and putting together them consistently. Or you've got to say, you know, is this really the team, the players from a player personnel aspect as well as from, you know, coaching that is going to take us in the direction of not just, I think I'll be, you know, I think a lot of Crew SC fans would be happy just making it to the playoffs, especially if you're making it there, playing at the right, you know, right level, getting hot at the right time. But I don't think anyone, too many Crew SC fans would be satisfied with, you know, getting in as that sixth seed and then bowing out immediately. I think fans want to see, they remember that 2015 run, they remember that 2014 run, and they think that this team's got the potential to make some noise. And it hasn't maybe come through yet, but, you know, is it? And if not, then you've got to make a decision, because with this personnel, you know, how big is the window?
You know, God, Bart, you're spot on tonight. I don't mean to, you know, stroke the ego, so to speak. But, you know, it's you get in with this squad, you know, and I fully agree with you that sixth won't cut it. You know, that's it. Sixth won't cut it. They've got to get in to at least a two or a three seed, I think. And like you said, you're going to have to go through Atlanta. Tata Martino's fantastic as a coach. But, you know, I think, you know, getting into this midsummer swing that Crew SC is normally famous for, and it feels like we're getting on this – on this rant almost on a weekly basis now, but you know, this summer is going to teach us a lot about what kind of crew SC team that we have and what we can expect going forward into the season. Because, you know, and I know a lot of folks don't want to say this. You know, I think the match against Montreal was a statement game. And I think that, you know, really was kind of a tribute to the resiliency that this team has. You know, we've seen it against Portland. We've seen it against Toronto. When they've gone down, they've come back. But, I mean, Crew SC hit back, and they hit back hard. You know, and if these guys can get that type of resiliency and keep that flowing throughout this year, I think they're going to be just fine.
It certainly will be interesting, and I guess we'll have to we'll get some picks in. But before we get our picks, I'm going to have to give a shout-out to a couple of our show sponsors, Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton, as well as the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street. Patronize them whenever you've got the opportunity. And I guess before we get into the picks, any other parting thoughts, gentlemen?
No.
I think Atlanta's overrated.
So,
a city and a team.
Oh!
I've never been to the city, but you're not missing much.
Careful, all right, Murph, back to careful, you. Careful, Stanek. Your Twitter mentions are going to light on fire today.
I will say that their hip hop scene is a lot better than Columbus's. I guess let's go in then.
Not a Bow Wow fan, Bart.
That's a little Bow Wow to you, Ralph. Hey. I believe that Columbus Crew have more rap songs written about them than Atlanta United. So that is a fact. Baby. Yellow Swag, you guys remember that?
Uh-huh.
Sadly, I do.
Yeah. Oh boy, yeah. Let's not. Let's just not even bring that up because then, yeah. But okay then. heading into picks then. Patrick Murphy, Atlanta, overrated. So what's the score?
Yeah, I think we may have touched on this, and if I missed it, I apologize. But Atlanta plays on Wednesday in the Open Cup, and I think they traveled to Miami, which I imagine will be hot and gross and disgusting. So we'll see what kind of lineup they put out there. But a midweek game for them. I think Columbus gets a little bit, you know, if you want to call it revenge for last 2 weeks ago, I guess. I'm going to go with the opposite 3-1 scoreline in Columbus's favor at Moffray.
3-1 from Smurf Alert. Ralph Schudel, what's he got?
I agree. Miami's gross and hot. But I'm going to go a 2-2 scoreline. We haven't had enough ties yet this year.
A draw, that would be draw number 2 on the campaign for Columbus from Ralph Schudel. Alex, what are you thinking?
I think Federico Higuain is going to put the team on his back, and we are going to win 2-1.
2-1 win, a couple, another point, get Pipa to
five goals in a row, Alex, for him?
I'm not sure if he's going to score. I just think he's going to put the team on his back, and just they're not going to be able to deal with him. He's going
to
go.
Is somebody going to come on the pitch though to help him out?
Well, you know, I thought about doing that, but no, I don't. I don't think he's going to get any help from a certain Colombian superstar who will soon be in a black and gold kit.
I do
James
think
Rodriguez.
Radamel Falcao Garcia.
If he does score, Federico, that is, I think that would be a first. I know only 4 people had scored 4 in a row. I don't know if anyone's ever scored 5 games in a row. I'd have to fact check that. But, yeah, that would be 5 in a row for him if he can find the net this weekend.
I like that. I like the record-breaking idea here. I mean, you know, he is going to score. Peep is going to score. Still 2-1, though.
I like it. I will go with a 3-2 game. Columbus will win because I've picked Columbus in every game and will pick Columbus in every game. But also, I'm still a bit concerned about things on the back end, and I do think that this Atlanta team with guys like Miguel Almiron and Assad, who's, I believe, he's got to be close to, if not leading MLS in helpers, you know, very dynamic playmaker that we didn't even really touch on too much for Atlanta United. But I think Columbus gets another strong game from Frederico Higuain. I think Justin Meerum bounces back after, you know, a couple maybe a bit lackluster performances, and Columbus gets the big win in front of the home fans to kick off July in good fashion. And that should, I believe, wrap things up again for this week. Thank you also so much for listening. Thank you, fellas, for talking with us. And we'll see you later. Bye, buddies.